When I parted ways with General Bragg after our victory at Chickamauga Creek, a victory that Bragg utterly wasted, I might add, Cora stayed behind. His wife's uncle, Colonel Thompson, was wounded, and your brother felt that he needed to look after him. Forrest puffed on the pipe for a moment. I haven't seen him since. He's quite a resourceful young fellow, though. I expect, wherever he is, he's all right.
That made Henry feel a little better. So did the warmth coming from the fire. It helped dry his sodden clothes somewhat. He extended his hands toward the flames.
Thanks, General. For the hospitality and for the news about Corey. Are you the fighting devil your brother is?
Forrest asked, with a grin.
Well, I don't know, sir, Henry answered honestly. But if you let me ride with you, I figure I'll have plenty of chances to find out.
Henry shared a tent with Merle and two other men, Wade Foreman and Jeb Carruthers. There had been a fourth man in the tent until a few days earlier, Merle explained.
He come down with the grip and died, most likely because of all this rain and chilly weather we've been having. Damn shame. He was a good fellow.
I'll try to live up to that, Henry said.
Merle clapped him on the shoulder.
You'll do fine. The general liked you, and he's a pretty good judge of character.
Although the ground was soggy inside the tent, it was better than having no protection at all. After Henry had taken care of his horses, he crawled into his blankets and fell into a deep sleep. The exhaustion brought on by the strain of the past few weeks kept him from dreaming. He awoke to hear Merle exclaim,
"Lordy, would you look at that!"
Henry unwrapped himself from his covers and crawled out into a world that was still gray and overcast, but at least it wasn't raining this morning. It was snowing instead, a thick curtain of flakes that swirled and danced in the light wind that was blowing. Henry's breath fogged in front of his face. The temperature had fallen below freezing during the night, and the snow was piling up already. The scene would have been beautiful under normal circumstances. As it was, though, the snow might just slow down the Confederate advance that much more. After a skimpy breakfast of hardtack and grain coffee, the men mounted up and moved out through the snow. As Henry rode along with Merle, Foreman, and Carruthers, it occurred to him that he had not sworn any oath of enlistment or been enrolled in any regimental records as far as he knew. That didn't seem to make any difference to his companions. They regarded him as one of them. Nor had the quartermaster wasted any time in taking Henry's second horse and giving it to one of the other troopers. The horses he had brought were just as important, if not more so, than he was, he sensed. Merle filled him in on all the gossip surrounding the campaign in which they were engaged.
Some Yankee general named Schofield is holed up at a place called Pulaski. We're trying to get twixt him and the rest of the Yankees up at Columbia. If we can do that, we can hit old Schofield and grab control of the Duck River crossing at Columbia. Thomas is up at Nashville, but he won't be able to stop us if we can keep Schofield from linking up with him.
Merle leaned over in the saddle and spat.
The Rock of Chickamauga, he said scornfully. That's what the Yankees call Thomas. We see what they call him when we busted him up into little bitty pebbles.
Despite the cold weather, the short rations, and the threadbare uniforms worn by many of the men, spirits were high. Henry could understand that. Most of these men were Tennesseans. They were going home, riding to liberate their state from the grip of the Yankees. Henry didn't blame them for being excited. He would have been, too, if he'd been on his way to drive the invaders out of Virginia. Around midday, a spate of gunfire broke out up ahead and to the right of where Henry rode with his three tent mates.
"Come on, boys," Merle said, and kicked his horse into a run.
The animal's hooves threw a spray of snowflakes into the air. Henry, Foreman, and Carruthers followed. Henry held the reins with one hand and slipped the other inside his coat. His fingers curled around the smooth wooden grips of the pistol. He had cleaned and dried it that morning before the troopers broke camp, and it had been protected inside his coat ever since. He thought there was a good chance it would work if he needed it. The snow was still falling, but not as heavily as it had been earlier. The gunshots grew louder. Henry caught a glimpse of muzzle flashes through the gloom. A line of trees bordered the road on the right, and up ahead several Confederate cavalrymen were firing carbines and pistols at something on the other side of those trees. Return fire came from the enemy. Henry saw flashes of blue uniforms through the swirling white of the snow. He and his new friends closed in on the skirmish. He pulled the pistol from behind his belt. He had never fired from the back of a running horse before and didn't know if he would be able to hit anything. He would give it a try, though. That was all he could do. Merle suddenly swerved his mount through a narrow gap in the trees.
"We'll get him in a crossfire," he shouted back over his shoulder.
Foreman and Carruthers hit the gap behind him. Henry brought up the rear, fighting the reins a little. He thought of himself as a good rider, but he realized now what a difference there was between cantering along on a decent road and galloping cross-country into combat. He had to concentrate on staying in the saddle. More gunfire sounded, closer than ever now. Henry looked ahead and saw Merle and the others moving in on a group of at least a dozen Federal cavalrymen. If the Confederates realized they were outnumbered, they didn't seem to care. High-pitched rebel yells split the air. Henry swallowed hard. He had come down here to Tennessee to fight the hated Yankees. Here was his chance. He lifted the pistol and pulled back the hammer. The gun went off before he was ready, the rough pace jarring his finger against the trigger. He yelled in surprise as the weapon blasted and bucked against his palm. He had no idea where the bullet went. He knew he had to calm down if he was going to survive his first battle. As he cocked the pistol again, he pulled the horse back into a slower run. Now he could level the revolver and at least aim a little before he fired again. This time, when he squeezed off a shot, he was confident that the bullet went in the right direction. He couldn't tell if he hit any of the Yankees, though. A haze of smoke filled the air. Combined with the still falling snow, it made it almost impossible to see anything. But Henry saw the Union cavalryman coming toward him only a few yards away. The man loomed up, seemingly out of nowhere. He brandished a saber over his head and sent his horse lunging toward Henry. Henry swung the pistol around and pressed the trigger, but nothing happened. To his horror, he realized that in the excitement and confusion of the moment, he had forgotten to cock the gun. He jerked on the reins and leaned far to the side in an effort to avoid the blade. The saber sliced through the air near his head, missing him. But he was off balance now, and so was the horse. With a shrill whinny, the animal fell. As the horse toppled over, Henry had the presence of mind to kick his feet free from the stirrups. He sailed through the air as he was thrown from the saddle. Landing so hard that the breath was knocked out of him, Henry rolled over in the snow. The Yankee was practically on top of him. The man leaned over to thrust his saber at Henry, obviously planning to skewer him and pin him to the ground. Before the thrust could find its target, another shape on horseback appeared beside the Yankee. Henry recognized Jeb Carruthers. A muzzle flash split the snowstorm as the Confederate fired into the Yankee's side at point-blank range, blowing the Northerner out of the saddle. The man crashed to the ground a few feet away from Henry, close enough for Henry to see his face contort in agony as he died from the bullet that had ripped through his vitals. A few flames flickered around the hole in his uniform, which had been set on fire by sparks from the barrel of Carruthers' gun. The flames went out as snowflakes settled gently on them. The flakes hissed as they melted. Henry looked into the dead man's open, staring eyes, then rolled in the other direction and retched, though there was not much in his stomach to come up. The closeness of his own brush with death, on top of watching the Yankee die at such close range, was too much for him. Sickness roiled his insides. But there was still fighting going on. A calm, icy voice somewhere deep inside his brain reminded him of that fact. He got his hands and knees under him and pushed himself to his feet. Somehow, he had held on to the pistol when he fell, and his horse was dancing around skittishly only a few feet away. Henry grabbed the reins, spoke soothingly to the animal, and swung up into the saddle. The skirmish had turned into a saber-swinging melee as Confederate cavalry pinched in from both flanks against the Federal troopers. Henry didn't have a sword, but he rode up close behind one of the Yankees and yelled, "Hey, Yank!" The man turned, and Henry saw he was carrying a carbine. The Yankee tried to lift the weapon, but Henry was too fast for him, firing into his chest from a distance of 5 or 6 feet. The Yankee's eyes widened in shock as he went over backward, falling off his horse. Henry desperately wanted to be sick again, but there was no time for that. He had one more round in his pistol. He fired that at another Yankee, and was rewarded by the sight of blood splashing from the man's shoulder. The Union trooper sagged in the saddle but did not fall. He galloped off into the snow. The rest of the Yankees who were still mounted followed his example. They turned tail and ran, racing away from the scene of the battle. Some of the Confederate horsemen went after them. The popping of gunshots receded into the distance. Henry tried to reload as he sat on his horse, but his fingers were cold and clumsy. Carruthers, Merle, and Foreman rode up alongside him. Henry looked at Carruthers and nodded. "Thanks." Carruthers grinned.
"Figure you'll do the same for me. Happen you ever get the chance."
Henry nodded, knowing the man was right. Now that he had ridden into battle with these troopers, a bond existed between them, a bond of a sort that Henry had never experienced before. It wasn't like they were brothers, but in some ways, it was almost that close.
"You done all right, Brennan," Merle said. "I thought you would. You got the look of a fighter. Reckon that's what the general's seeing in you, too."
He prodded his horse toward the north.
"Come on, let's go nip at the heels of them Yanks."
Henry finally finished reloading his pistol. He closed it and tucked it under his coat again. Then he fell in with the others as they rode in pursuit of the enemy.